It's Reefer Madness, the podcast with Trevor and Kirk.
Trevor.
Kirk.
You're bringing me a nursing story.
Yeah, I stole a nursing story from you, but I'm going to call it a autism story, so it's not just that I'm stealing all the good nurses.
I just love the people we talk to. How did you find Jenna?
Through Sue, of course. Shout out to Sue.
Lyme Warrior.
Sue, our Lyme Warrior, said, Trevor, you've got to meet this nurse, Jana. I said, oh, okay. So a few emails later, we've got her on the show.
And it's a great interview. She is definitely somebody that we can actually learn from as a nurse. I can learn from her. She's a cannabis nurse, and she's come out and now calls herself a cannabis nurse. I'm not sure when that happens. But yeah, I really enjoyed listening to it. And again, I break in a couple times because I like to find out how people use cannabis with Western medicine and blend it.
And the autism stuff was fascinating, and she explains it way better than me. But one of the things I thought, just sort of as the aside, is she's not a nurse practitioner. Like, she's not prescribing. She's acting as a nurse.
She's a nurse.
She's not a prescriber. She's helping people manage their conditions with cannabis. And, you know, but she's not telling him, you know, stop what the doctor said, or, you know, yes, I should talk to your doctor about this. Like, she's using cannabis for her clients / patients, but as a nurse.
Well, you see, nursing, it's almost like accountants. There's different types of accountants. There's different types of nurses. I mean, you have nursing aides that help with the bedside care and basically daily livings. You have an LPN, licensed practical nurses, who are the new diploma nurses. They're the ones that are trained to work in the acute care in the hospital. They're the old diploma nurses. What I used to be, a diploma RN. You now become a diploma LPN, licensed practical nurse. Then you have the degree nurses, and Jan is a BSN, I noticed. I'm also a BSN. BSN nurses tend to go to university, or they do go to university. You come up with a wellness model. Nursing, community health, public health, you're more in the wellness state of mind. So what she's done is she's calling herself a holistic nurse. I see that as a wellness nurse. That's how I see myself when I'm practicing. I try to help people to be well in their sickness. So it's kind of cool to see how other nurses are using their education for something that I believe in, holistic approach.
Yeah, and we'll let Jana describe it, but I also find, you know, like you said, interesting people we talked to. This was a nurse, like she said, a AAA personality in the cardiac care ward, throwing lines into people. Like, she was, you know, hardcore Western medicine, save this patient now, nurse, and then stuff changed. How about we'll let Jana tell us what changed?
My name is Jana Champagne, and I'm a cannabis nurse. You'd be surprised at the types of responses I get to that statement. But it is becoming a bona fide profession. And basically, I consider myself a holistic nurse. My focus is alternatives to pharmaceuticals. And of course, cannabis fits that bill really well. So I work with individual patients and assess their considerations and possible risk factors of cannabis therapy and help to educate them to kind of work around their specific situation and hopefully optimize their cannabis therapy outcomes.
Thank you very much. Now, I understand you have a very personal reason why cannabis in sort of the medical field became interesting to you, and it sort of happened during some of your training as a nurse.
Yes, actually, I was working full-time as a nurse in acute care and critical care cardiac, pulling arterial lines and pushing propofol, which we're not even allowed to do as nurses anymore. So pretty high-level nursing, and my body suffered a pretty traumatic health collapse in 2012. And, you know, the mainstream medicine just didn't have a lot of answers that made sense for my situation. It turned out that I had chronic Lyme disease that had triggered lupus. And so I started looking for alternatives. And I did do the mainstream treatment for about 18 months and was not seeing any progress. And I was on disability and non-functional, really severe symptoms, extreme fatigue. And, you know, for who I was prior to illness, I was kind of an A++ personality, you know, very on task and motivated and energetic. So it was such a different time for me. And I thought cannabis mostly for pain relief. I was in extreme pain with my joints, and I knew I didn't want to go down that opioid, you know, death pathway that, you know, you see the results of that working with patients in the hospital. Knew that wasn't an option that appealed. Started the cannabis, and in addition to relieving my pain and making me, you know, better functional wise, it also began to modulate my immune system. And it began to help balance my body systems that were out of whack. And it took a few years to fully recover, but now I'm actually negative for autoimmune. And I'm fully functional. I wouldn't say I'm back to the 110% I was before, but I'm able to function every day and, you know, very, very, not very often at all that I have a bad day anymore. So it's quite a testament from where I was literally bedbound and very, very sick before. So it's made a huge difference in my own life.
Well, I'm really glad. And we do have another topic to get to, but I just want to dig into two of the things you said a little bit more. So if nobody has heard of lupus before, and I'll say I have heard of it, but I'm probably going to get this wrong. It's an autoimmune / arthritis type disease, right? And that was triggered by your Lyme. Is that so that's what you're talking about your immune system was doing funny things and cannabis helped re-regulate that? Absolutely. Am I on the right track?
You are correct. Yes. And so lupus, it is an autoimmune joint disorder, and basically your body begins attacking your own joint tissue. And in my case, I believe my body was actually going after Lyme disease, which also attacks your joint tissue. So it can look like self-attack when really the body is going after the infection.
Okay. So, but now there's lots and lots we could talk to you about, you know, your whole practice is really interesting, but one of the main reasons we have you on today is a slightly different part of your life. You are also a parent of an autistic child. Can you tell us a little bit about your child? Well, you know what? Let's start with, because honestly, as a pharmacist, I probably don't have a great grasp on even what autism is. So how about tell us a little bit about your child and a little bit about, as a nurse, what you and parent, what you understand autism to be?
Okay. So my daughter has regressive autism, meaning that from birth to about age two, she was typically developing, and she suffered a major regression neurologically and developmentally. Returned basically back to being an infant. She lost all of her speech. She lost her eye contact. She lost her receptive language. So you would talk to her and she would just ignore you. A lot of sensory issues. She lost her bond with most everybody in her life, including her father, which is unheard of. You know, little girls are supposed to be, you know, the center of their daddy's world, and she just couldn't care less if he was around or not. So it was a very, very crazy phase that we went through. You know, as a nurse, I was researching and trying to figure out what had happened. And, you know, ballpark is with autism, it's underlying imbalances in the neurological, immune, and gastrointestinal systems of the body. And all of these systems are connected. And so when one begins to downward spiral, it can impact another one, basically. And that's where I think mainstream medicine is really missing the mark with autism, because they want to stay in their little category boxes of neurology or gastroenterology or immunology, and they don't want to look at how those systems interact. So with autism, taking a holistic approach is very important. And that's what initially got me looking into holistic medicine as a nurse and heavy biomed. I've done or heard of just about every intervention you can think of with autism. And I work predominantly now with parents of kids with autism. And you hear all kinds of crazy things that people try to help their kids. I think health sense therapy was one that came up recently where they actually gave their child warm eggs and purposely infected them with a parasite to see if that would help.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds a little off-putting, doesn't it? But you know, the take home is that parents are desperate to find answers for these kids. Mainstream medicine really isn't providing a lot of solutions. You know, the mental health medications are overused, and there aren't any studies on the long-term effects on children in general, much less kids with autism that already have profound imbalances. And so my daughter, you know, she was still nonverbal at age 10, and she was still severe on the spectrum. And, you know, I began homeschooling her when she was 7 because the local school district couldn't figure out how she learned. And she learns very backwards. She's kind of an autodidact. She teaches herself a lot of things, but, you know, with her not being able to speak, she can't communicate what she knows. And then a couple of years after that, she entered a puberty crisis. And okay. This was about the time that I started feeling better with Lyme, that she went into extreme behaviors. And this is common to about 50% of kids with autism. So, you know, we hear it all the time that children are removed from their homes and placed in foster care when they hit puberty because they become aggressive and they begin destroying property and they're self-injurious. And what I've learned is I believe those behaviors are communication, that something's not right. And, you know, if they can't tell you verbally, they're going to behave.
Okay. And so, I just want to jump in. No, you're doing a great job. But just because when we talked on the phone beforehand, that was the first time I'd heard of the term puberty crisis. So this is this sort of self-destructive, or not even self, but this destructive behavior in autistic kids that seems to pop out around puberty. And this is a fairly common thing.
It's estimated to occur in about 50% of kids with autism.
Okay.
So, and parents are fairly well aware. They hear it can be a game changer. So.
Okay. Sorry for jumping in. I just wanted to go because that was the first time I'd heard that term. Okay. So we have a daughter who's going through a crisis and things are kind of spiraling. And what happened next?
So I had already used cannabis on myself and saw the results for Lyme disease. And with self-injurious behavior, I began to work on this theory that it might be pain related. You know, these kids are harming themselves in an attempt to release those endorphins, which is the body's natural pain relief mechanism. And so we began treating her with cannabis, and it eased our situation. And we were able to get her behaviors under control. And, you know, now she's 17, and retrospectively, the cannabis has not only improved her quality of life, spared her out-of-home placement and the trauma that comes with being removed from your family and your home, but it's also improved her function. And like I said, at age 10, my daughter was completely nonverbal. Now at age 17, she and I are having spontaneous conversations for the first time in her life.
That's fantastic.
She's also progressed enormously in school. Since coming out of her puberty crisis, she's completed 2 to 3 grades every year in school. And now she's on track to get either a GED or a high school diploma, which was thought impossible when she was 7. So, I mean, she's really come a long way.
That's an amazing story. Now, obviously, this will be different for every different patient and whatnot. But what kind of doses and strains, what have you been using with your daughter, and has it changed?
It changes week by week with her, really. And luckily, you know, I'm in Oregon and I'm able to grow our own medicines, and I've sort of learned which strains work well. In general, we tend to stick with indica strains for autism. You know, indica, that means the terpene profile is more sedative and calming in its effect. And that tends to be the better fit for autism in general, for that calming and sedating, because their brains are usually in a state of overstimulation. So if you were to give a child with autism a sativa strain that's also stimulating, it can bypass that threshold and actually trigger anxiety or panic attacks or more behaviors.
Okay.
So, you know, and the approach differs based on that child too.
So. No, thank you. And just because we get patients way brighter than us talking to us about terpenes and whatnot, do you know specifically which terpenes seems to work well for her on sort of the sedating end, and which ones to avoid on the stimulating end? Have you broken it down that much?
Yes. Actually, we love myrcene. Myrcene is found in mangoes. It's sedative as long as it's more than 1% in that formulation. And it also helps the cannabis cross the blood-brain barrier. With autism, we know there's imbalances in the brain, so that's an important piece. Linalool is a great one. Linalool is also found in lavender, so it's got that calming and sedating effect. It's also anti-seizure, so if, you know, kids with autism often have a seizure disorder as well, so it can be helpful for that. Humulene is a great one. You find humulene in hops, and that one is great for helping with sleep, which is often an issue with autism. As far as sativas, I typically advise avoiding limonene, which is found in lemons. It can be just too stimulating. Pionine is another one that I've seen, you know, trigger behaviors in kids. So, you know, I can certainly tell you my daughter's protocol, tell you there's about 8 different tinctures that we mix and match. And I really base what I mix for her on any given day on how she's looking that day. And I can tell you PMS week, it looks completely different from every other week of the month, because she requires much higher levels of support that week.
I do want to come back to PMS, but Kirk is making hand signals at me. Just how are you actually getting it into her? So you make the tincture, and then is she drinking it? Are you putting in her food? How's it getting in?
Well, if we need a quick response, say that she's showing signs that she's triggered and a behavior is forthcoming, we'll use something that's quicker acting, like we'll give it to her sublingually, which she tolerates, or even by vape pen. And vape pens are not something I recommend using on a regular basis with kids with autism, but when they're headed towards a full tilt behavior, and it's a great tool for stopping it in that moment. And then just for her baseline support, we put the tincture in an empty capsule and she swallows it twice a day.
Okay. PMS, because that we've sort of circled around that in a couple of other ones. So, what have you been finding works well in PMS, at least in your daughter?
Well, for my daughter, like I said, our big focus is with the puberty crisis was relieving pain for her. We saw nonverbal signs that she was having migraine headaches. She gets bloated. She gets constipated. And so we treat according to those symptoms for her. For other kids, it might look like heightened anxiety or OCD or, you know, so it just sort of depends. But for her PMS week, we really increased the pain relieving strains for her. And that seems to really help. So she went from being diagnosed PMDD, which is, you know, the dysphoric disorder. It's basically homicidal PMS, to where now she's very well managed. And not just with the cannabis, but we've added in some herbs that help to decrease her estrogen dominance as well. And that combination has worked very well.
Well, this is all very interesting. Before Kirk jumps in with some more questions, one of the ones we were talking about before. So we have a friend of the show who is a nurse in Manitoba. Now, obviously, you know, there's going to be different laws in Canada versus the U.S., but we'll throw this one out anyway. So we've got a nurse we know. He treats his anxiety with cannabis, and his college is kind of coming after him because, well, you know, obviously he's a drug addict and just has a cannabis use disorder. How about your college? You're obviously very out there as somebody who not only treats people with cannabis, but uses it yourself. Does the I assume I've got this right, the College of Nursing of Oregon have any complaints about, you know, you are nursing under the influence of cannabis?
You know, I haven't had any professional ramifications to doing this work. There are a lot of nurses who are too fearful to do this work. And it really comes down to it being a decision how to proceed. I really feel like this work gives purpose to what my daughter and I have experienced in our past. And so it's very therapeutic. And I see the benefits of educating patients and empowering them to try cannabis and helping to guide them to products that might best fit their situation and how to work around things like pharmaceutical interactions or other possible risk factors they may entail, like predisposition to schizophrenia. You know, the outcomes are really what keep me going. And the Oregon State Board of Nursing, and really none of the state boards of nursing in the U.S., have adopted any guidelines for cannabis nursing. There is the NCSBN put out a scope of practice, quote unquote, for cannabis nursing. And so I abide by that to the letter. And basically what I do is considered patient education. And I follow the guidelines by the Oregon State Board of Nursing for patient education. I'm not giving advice of how to change their prescriptions. I'm, you know, working with their physicians whenever possible. And oftentimes, you know, patients get results and they go to their physician and then the physician will call me and say, what are you doing? And I want to learn about this. So it's really interesting how it's sort of matriculating and evolving over time.
Thank you very much. That gives us a glimmer anyway into cannabis nursing south of the border. So, and Kirk might jump in with some more questions in a second, but before I forget to ask, so we've sort of gone over autism and we're kind of gone over some of what you do with cannabis and autism and your daughter. Anything else you think our listeners need to know about autism or cannabis or the combination that I've sort of missed?
Well, I wrote an article on the subject a few years ago, and it's my daughter's story and her positive response and a lot of the science supporting cannabis for autism. And there are a lot of articles that support that autism is endocannabinoid deficiency as one of the root causes. And so, you know, looking at it from that perspective, realizing that, you know, according to another research study, kids with autism commonly experience what we call anandamide deficiency. And anandamide is the cannabinoid we make in our body that works the same way as THC from the plant. So, I mean, there's a lot of hesitation sometimes with parents that call me and they're not sure, you know, which components to try. And of course, I always revert to their wisdom about their child and, you know, and their feelings about it. But a little bit of education can sometimes help to push through any fears and realize that, you know, with cannabis, we're actually addressing a root contributor to autism in these kids. And I really think that is why we see such profoundly positive responses.
Thank you very much.
So it's definitely worth trying. Yeah.
No, and I think you did send me that link, and we'll try and get it in the show notes so people can have a read of that article. Kirk, anything else that I've been missing? A
couple questions I have. We're all sort of Western-trained health professionals. I'm a nurse, you're a nurse, Trevor's a pharmacist. How do you, I'm going to make an assumption, when you had your illness and working with your daughter, you probably started with Western medicine, and then you sort of started your own holistic approach with cannabis and herbs. Are you still balancing Western medicine with the cannabis in your practice?
It's definitely having the knowledge of Western medicine that I have from my nursing experience helps, because I think, well, I know the biggest considerations around starting cannabis therapy have to do with the pharmaceutical interactions. So knowing the pharmacology and understanding how cannabis might change how a drug works in the body or even block it. You know, those are important distinctions, and also combined effects. I mean, I look very closely at how cannabis can combine with things like antihypertensive or antidiabetics, teaching the patient to monitor their levels to ensure that they're continuing in a really safe manner and avoiding any potential adverse effects of those combinations. So it definitely, there are parts that bring in that knowledge. Overall, you know, my daughter and I, the only prescriptions we're on are antihistamines and mast cell stabilizers, and it's because they're more benign than a lot of the over-the-counter meds. But otherwise, we're strictly on supplements and on the cannabis. And this kind of brings in another area where I specialize. It's nutrigenomics, and it's looking at genetics and using it to guide targeted supplementation to help decrease some of those genetic mutations and their contributions to the underlying imbalances in the body. So we're on quite a few supplements combined with the cannabis.
So obviously in Western medicine, we're all trained to document. So yes. How do you deal with skeptics that are saying, well, you're taking the Western stuff, so how do you know the cannabis is working? How do you know that the herbs are working? How do you justify using cannabis in your therapeutic approach?
Well, oftentimes if a patient is calling me, the mainstream approach is not working for them, or they would not be reaching out. So, you know, oftentimes with polypharmacy, as you know, we get into side effects that are being treated by more pharmaceuticals. And so what I find and what I teach my patients is to start the cannabis therapy, how to work around any medications they're currently taking, documenting for their physician. Part of our patient handbook is a journal for patients so they can write down which component of cannabis they took, what their response was. You know, of course, making sure they're monitoring other situations as applicable. And then what I find is once they get stabilized on the cannabis therapy, it usually reduces their reliance on the pharmaceuticals. And this is often the case. And this is where bringing, you know, making sure they're communicating with their physician comes in, because we know that a prescription is a doctor order, and as nurses, we can't advise against that. So I always tell the patients, when you feel like you may not need the pharmaceuticals as much, go to your doctor and ask him to help you reduce the dose or wean off of it or whatever it is your goal might be. So it's still, there's a lot of collaboration with Western medicine in my work.
And I was sort of asking you about documentation. Have you ever used the app StrainPrint?
I haven't. Is that a...
It's a Canadian app. It's we're big fans, and they're sponsors of the show, so we'll throw that out. But even if they weren't, we're big fans. We like to talk about it as being sort of a diabetic log for cannabis. And it's just one of these days, have a look. It's literally StrainPrint, all one word, .ca. So from the patient's point of view, it's an app where they enter in their strain, and then it'll remind them 10, 20, 30 minutes later to ask them how it helped. And it's really nice for the patient to log. And then the company's gone the extra step further on. So for the patient, everything's free. There is clinic software on the other end. So, you know, doctors, nurse, whatever, can actually collect all this stuff from their various patients if they use StrainPrintNet to log it. And they've got other miscellaneous things like a StrainPrint community, and they'll even say, you know, 45-year-old female patients with MS in Manitoba have been using strain X. So it can even be something, one, you know, yes, it's Canadian-based, but, you know, could give a practitioner an idea about what strain to try next because it's been working in this patient group in this part of the country. So, yeah, we're shameless promoters of StrainPrint, but have a look. We just, as a, like I said, a diabetic log for cannabis, it's been very handy.
Yeah, it sounds like a great service. And, you know, patients, that's one of the reasons they call me, is because, you know, in Oregon, they'll go to the doctor and get a signature saying they may benefit from cannabis therapy. You know, it looks nothing like a prescription. It looks, you know, you don't have the exact chemical composition they're after. You don't have a route. You don't have a frequency. And then they're left to walk into a dispensary where there can be thousands of products, and they have no idea what's medical quality versus, you know, better left for recreational, and what might actually best fit their situation, what might be best avoided. So that's a great service that they're offering.
Yeah, we're, like I said, shamelessly promoting, but it's worked well in lots of people we've talked to.
Yeah, just as a practitioner, Jen, I would suggest look it up, strainprint.ca. I think you'll find it'll work with your practice.
Yeah, I will do that for sure.
Kirk, I feel a little smarter about autism.
Autism, I think, Trevor, it's a spectrum. So I think one person's autism is another person's normality.
Well, no, I think I like this quote. I forget who it was from. A famous autistic person. Oh, I forgot her name. Doesn't matter. She said, so, you know, when you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism.
Exactly. Yeah. And I can't imagine how fortunate I've been in my world with my kids, you know.
Temple Grandin. Look, I remember the name. Temple Grandin.
I couldn't imagine waking up one morning and my child has a different personality. I couldn't imagine that.
Well, no. And like she said, you know, her daughter no longer relates to dad. I've got a daughter. That would suck.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Let's ignore what would be bad for the patient, the child. But as a parent, that would be terrible.
And I'm working on a new role called Papa. Granddad. So I've got a little granddaughter, and I love her to death. It's astounding. I couldn't imagine her personality just changing like that. It's tough work, but good interview. Good on you to find a holistic nurse in Oregon. Well done.
Yeah, and thank you, Jana. You taught us lots, and I got the feeling there's lots left to learn.
Music. I didn't bring any again. I'm just counting on our fella.
Renee, can you save us one more time?
Certainly. I've got a band here from Fork River, Manitoba. Population, I don't know, what is it, 26? But it's just north of Dauphin. And this is a band that's been around for about 25 years. And they just recorded some new music in the last couple of years. Their name is Eden Murr. And this is an instrumental piece that they call Marching Out. So that's the tune for the day.
Kirk, it's been another good one. I beat you to it.
You did. It's another good one. Yep. Reefer Madness, the podcast.
Come on back, everybody.
Yeah, you find us in all the social media. You find us in iHeartRadio. You find us in Stitcher. You find us in SoundCloud. You find us in Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
But the home of everything Reefer Madness still is reefermed.ca.
That's our webpage. You know, people, we like to grow by word of mouth. If you tell a friend you found us, they'll tell a friend, and we'll be like a shampoo commercial.
And so on. And so on. And so on.
We're growing word of mouth, people. Join the team. Come on, Reefer Madness.
Okay.
This is how we do it in the studio, guys. This is it. Thank you. I'm wearing a shirt, eh?